thesis from day one in our businesses we had in the past was always to try to get the idea that structured and unstructured information together should actually be looked at in combination. So what does that mean in staffing? I have a record that represents a candidate and I have a resume. Yes, I can parse the resume to create the record, but I'm going to lose data there. What if I could just search both of them together as if they were the same thing? And that has always been a fiction in the industry until recently.
Hey, LJ, how many talks at conferences have you given on AI this year?
Oh my goodness. I actually have no idea. It's been so many.
Oh God. And how many times have you taught this AI to supercharge your desk course already?
Over 2 dozen times now.
2 dozen? God, you were at 8 the last time I asked you, like a month ago. Good Lord.
I know. It has been exceedingly popular and it's gotten rave reviews. So we're super excited about what I think is going to be the leveling the playing field, the great equalizer is generative. And, you know, I've been quoted as saying, AI won't replace you, but someone that knows how to use it will. And so you need to get on it if you haven't.
That's right, guys. So check out the Supercharger Desk with AI that Lauren is teaching via Leap Consulting. And you can find her at lauren@leapconsultingsolutions.com.
What's happening, Rob?
Lauren Jones, how the hell are you today?
I am so fantastic, but most importantly, I am so excited for you. You had a big thing happen today, and we need to tell the world.
Yeah. I shared with the leadership chat today that I felt baby Mackenzie kicking through mama's belly this morning for the first time, even though my wife has been saying hello to her as she kicks at her.
Yeah. Now you can appreciate she's making a human there.
No, I got that part. I saw the ultrasounds. That part wasn't in question. But feeling the baby was really exciting because randomly, like, I'll like be sitting on the couch with her and she'll be like, hello, Mackenzie. And now there's actually, you know, I can feel it too.
She was dancing. Was music playing?
We're literally just getting up. So,
okay.
Manny was laying in bed. So the baby was awake, which I think is one of the funniest little things that babies do is like when you're walking around, the whooshing sound keeps them sleeping in the womb. And apparently, when you lay down, the rocking ends and they wake up and start having a dance party.
Exactly. But Ali used to karate.
Human evolution, F that up royally.
Well, all right. Want to sleep, but this is very exciting. It was very exciting for you. So I'm
super excited. All right. Well, anyway, guys, we are super excited because we have an original gangster of matching and learning or machine learning going on and matching.
Oh, gee.
CEO and founder of Kona Search, Andrew McKay. What's going on, brother?
Hey, man. It's nice to be here. And thanks for having me and getting people to actually listen to anything I have to say.
We're excited.
So you will find out that Andrew could play the part of Larry David in any one of his shows with his subtle humor.
Oh, that was a great show. That's a real compliment, by the way. I like Larry David.
Yeah. I mean, he's a great comedian. It's very subtle, though. Yeah. So.
Well, deadpan.
Yeah. So anyway, we're going to kick off and ask you the standard questions to get you going here. And then we will jump into a lot of talk. And I think I'm actually really excited about the AI talk. I have to be honest, Andrew, sometimes you talk AI and I'm like, it's a little bit of like the teacher in Charlie Brown now. Because it's getting there. Right? This is a lot. But I'm excited to hear from our prep conversation, really start to hear what your opinion is, because you've had some really fresh takes that I've heard in the past. So that was exciting. So anyway, let's kick off the get to know you questions and a book or a follow right now that you would recommend.
So, books. Well, on the business side, you read business books and most of them are like one person. They have one idea and they repeat it 100 different ways for 20 or 30 pages. But I actually really liked Reed Hastings' No Rules, Rules book. Reed Hastings is, you know, the guy.
Jennifer Myers.
Yeah.
One of my favorite too. I quote that a lot. So
we aspire to get to that level. Mainly, I think, driven by the fact that I really hated filling out expense reports. But on the history side, if you think of a book in history, right now I just finished reading How to Hide an Empire by Daniel Immerwahr, and it might be mispronouncing his last name, so apologies there.
Is that like in Brazil in the Amazon or?
No, it's actually a view of American history through the eyes of the colonies. And I mean American colonies. It's not a polemic book. It actually is historical and pretty neutral, but it's really fascinating view.
So, interesting. I'll have to go check it out. My former history teacher is intrigued.
We're in his teacher right here.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. And on the fiction side, anything Jack Reacher, I just eat Lee Child's up. It's just amazing. And we won't talk about the first movie. That we just won't talk about. But the actual
TV. The books have been good. The TV shows have been fun. That dude is gigantic.
He is ginormous.
I just don't know.
And it's interesting. Is they play Jack Reacher as like he's slightly on the spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does it. He does it really well. It's like, it's very. It's good. He's an intriguing character, and he's like, he creates a little curiosity as you're like trying to like unpeel that onion. So,
It's fun. The books are great because it's a guilty pleasure because you shouldn't be praising somebody who's running around beating people up in the street. You have to learn it when you read them. It's well, they're
hero,
well
hero you love, right?
Yeah. It's like an anti hero. All right.
Yeah. He's like a Dexter, right? Who didn't love Dexter?
There you go.
Okay, so now, most memorable moment in your career. We say most memorable moment in staffing, but most memorable moment in your career.
Oh, I'd say the most memorable moment was the first startup that we were involved with and we exited it out. I mean, honestly, I got out of school, and aside from a contract from the Canadian government to get an FM license for our radio station, which was, spending time doing an awful lot of, wrong things in the studio at 3 a.m. But to be honest with you, that was amazing. But when we actually went to a small startup, and it was software, I've been in the software industry from the beginning, and then seeing it rise through to the point where we sold it was just, I said, I really like doing that. And that's what I've been repeating since then. It's a lot of fun. And some people think it's crazy to start something from nothing and then keep moving it forward. That was my first real taste of what I thought would be a business success.
That's awesome.
Entrepreneurs are a different breed, for sure.
Yeah, it's an odd word, entrepreneur, but I just don't know any better. People ask me, why do you do this? And I said, well, it's because I have a really low boredom factor. I just do. And so I keep moving on. I overstayed my welcome at the buying company, and then I figured it out and I moved on.
Good for you.
Yeah. Okay. All right, I'm going to ask my favorite question first. Yep. What is your greatest failure?
Yeah, that was a hard one. Other than too much TMI in my own personal life, which I won't bring up. I used to brew my own beer at home. And I remember people really got into the beer I was doing. Because I didn't do it from the recipes. I did it right from scratch. Buying my own Irish moss, everything. And I did a batch one because everything has to do with cleaning. And the cleaning gets to be really tiring. And I remember I did a batch that I really had to get out to a whole bunch of friends and people at work. And I had pneumonia and I just kept brewing it. And somehow that batch got completely ruined. And I swear it's because of the bacteria from the pneumonia. And he said, you know what? I'm done. I just completely ruined, gallons and gallons and gallons of beer. I'm done. It's a kind of a silly one. But other than that, then I have to get into personal life things. And I don't want to do that. So,
okay. We won't make you. We will make it.
We appreciate that. But that's a story we'd like to maybe not hear.
That could be a whole episode. Greatest achievement. So, we've got your most memorable moment, but I'm the greatest achievement.
It's a trite answer. And you guys would say the same thing maybe, but we have one child, my son. And my wife and I got married late in life. So we're on that curve where science and sheer luck, managed to create a child. And so I know it's a trite answer, but my biggest success.
Hey, that's your answer. That's your answer. That's awesome.
That's kind of our purpose, right?
He's 16 right now. So half the time I want to throw him out the window, but
no. Sure.
Or steal his podcast mic. By the way, Andrew's recording this from his son's HyperX podcast mic that he uses to game.
And it changes color, guys. It's a gaming microphone. And
got a total gaming thing going on.
Color will change eventually.
No, we believe you. We're not going to use the video. Don't worry.
All right.
Sorry. All right. And now the most divisive question of them all, Andrew. Are you a dog or a cat person?
I've had both, but I'm a dog person. We have a Samoyed. It's actually our third Samoyed. We have this rule that if dogs fit in your lap, they're not dogs.
I agree, but Lauren has a wide variety. She has the largest dog that you've ever. She has a Great Dane.
Oh,
and then she has like two lap dogs or three ish lap dogs.
Yeah, we go from like 95 pounds to 8 pounds. So, you know, we have
8 pound was a rescue, wasn't it? Like you.
The 8 pound one? We've got a couple rescues, but.
What's your name?
Oh, no, Delilah is his outgrown Will. So Will's the tiniest one. He's the toy schnauzer.
Okay.
So,
like a teacup or something? I mean, it was real.
No, he's a toy schnauzer and, you know, he's 8 pounds of fury.
Wow.
Hey, wait, hold on. I'm going to go get this. I'm looking at it. I got Layla's adoption photo. You want to see this thing?
Oh,
I found
God.
It.
Of course. And guys, you have to know that if Rob is as obsessed with his kid as he is with his dog, we are in trouble. Look at her.
That was Layla when we adopted her.
But by the way, I will say that we always have female dogs. We don't have male dogs because when male dogs are alone, they just bark and yell and bark and just don't stop. Female dogs are like, it's great that you're around. And if you're not, well, all right, I can chill. Right.
Mine is kind of an alpha. My female dog lifts her legs to pee sometimes. So. I did not get that.
Oh, okay. Well, I will tell you this, Andrew. We have six dogs, but we have one male, and that's Will, that 8 pound dog. And he ruled the roost.
Is Will really the only male dog in the
only male dog? Yeah. Because there's Gracie. So Gracie, Lily, Gretchen, Delilah, Mila, and Will.
Oh my God.
And Will's the appropriate name, I guess, for that dog, isn't it?
Pure power.
We used to give our Samoyeds Russian names because we thought, hey, that's clever because they're a Russian dog. And then we picked up our latest dog for our son, and he said, you get the name right. He says, Snowball. So she's a Samoyed called Snowball, you know?
Oh.
So
is it white, hopefully?
Oh, yeah. Samoyeds are. Yeah. She actually only has imps on the end of her hair. We walk around downtown Boston, and we can't go more than 10 feet without somebody taking a picture with her. And she's in a Swahili rap video that they filmed in Boston Gardens, and they saw the dog, and we said, sure, hand the dog over to it was a model and the rapper walking up and promenading up and down the path there. And she's worked, the dog has been in the entire video, actually.
Well, fun fact, Snowball is famous.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
All right.
No idea what the video is about. It could be the most misogynist video on the planet. It's all in search. Well, it's well produced.
Or Snowball.
And Snowball's in there. All right.
Okay.
I love that.
Our favorite topic, Rob, AI. So, Andrew, just a little while we kind of die a little bit on AI. So, last year, you know, I had every year I'll write one or two new keynotes, right? And just put them in the library because I do a lot of speaking. I wrote this, you know, really cool one last year on maximizing your technology investment. I got to do that keynote once because every single other one was on AI, because I have one on AI too. And so we've been doing a lot of talking about AI. And fun fact, in November of 2023, there were 10,000 tech businesses started that were boasting AI. So it's been a lot of noise in 2023.
Yeah. Listen, these days you put out your shingle and it says vector queries /RAG/LLM. And all of a sudden somebody says, oh, here's $20 million.
Yep.
You know, this is not the first time this has happened, but it's obviously the bright, shiny thing right now.
For sure.
And we've actually been in the business for a while because we've been in enterprise search for a long time. So vector queries and LLMs are not new to us. It's just that they've matured to a point of, you know, somebody coming along and saying, hey, I'm going to create ChatGPT and I'm going to make a lot of news on it because 16-year-olds can write their essays in haiku pretending they're, you know, 23 years old or something. And I get it. I mean, that's how technology really moves forward. But to be honest with you, there's a lot of hype there. And maybe we can talk a little bit about the substance behind it. So.
Yes. Let's do. Yeah. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, you said you kind of mentioned it, right? You started out in enterprise matching. So do you want to give a quick breakdown of how that, like, well, one, I think it's interesting how you started Kona or the business prior and got into this in the first place. So you want to give us a quick history of that machine learning curve? Because obviously, if you think about the use of AI in the staffing and recruiting space, probably most spaces, matching machine learning came first. And now we're at generative and we'll get to RAG or directive, right? Which is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like more future state. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'll throw the buzzwords out there to get the excitement, but, you know, to be honest with you, that's a great question because I know that, AI has always had a very checkered, relationship with the recruiting industry. And rightly so, because one of the things you don't want to do is perpetuate profiling bias, you know, on graphics and stuff. And of course, AI is designed to do that because that gives you the best answers. So how do you work with that within the industry? So if you take a look at the history of how things have worked, it's always been a long run parallel in general with the search industry, where there's a side of the world that says, we're databases. We run your business. We have structured information. Our lingua franca is SQL. We have business intelligence and everything's either a zero or 100, right? Because mostly it grew up, was driven out of financial systems. And then you had the search world saying, we're all the really happy, fun people, you know, and we look at text and websites and everything else. And Google's our guy and, you know, it's all fuzzy and somewhere between zero and 100. Well, that's great, but the technologies always went in parallel without never actually looking at each other. And when you're in a business, you have both. And so my thesis from day one in our businesses we had in the past was always to try to get the idea that structured and unstructured information together should actually be looked at in combination. So what does that mean in staffing? I have a record that represents a candidate and I have a resume. Yes, I can parse the resume to create the record, but I'm going to lose data there. What if I could just search both of them together as if they were the same thing? And that has always been a fiction in the industry until recently. And I thought when I started Kona Search, I wanted to have a trial by fire. And Salesforce is basically a predominantly traditional relational model, unfortunately populated with a lot of text. And we thought that's a perfect trial by fire to bring the two of them together. So we got into the recruiting industry quite naturally because simply search is a strategic part of that. And one of the things I realized was that we're not actually searching in recruiting, we're matching. Search is the technology behind the match. But if you're matching, now you start to bring in possible bias. So where does the AI come in? Well, when somebody says, you know, how does AI apply to industry X? I say, you're asking the wrong question, because if you're referring to machine learning versus referring to Gen AI and LLMs and RAG, they're very different things. You can use them for learning, but machine learning takes what you have and takes the history of stuff that's related to it and makes it better. But what does make it better mean in recruiting? Well, gosh, you know, you were most successful, you know, placing people who are white males between the ages of 18 and 35. So let's just continue doing that and we'll make more money. As we know that that's not the right way to do things, nor is it actually the best answer. It just worked in the past because it was a financial bias. But the reality is that if you really want to look at historical data, you're going to get that bias into your system. Every time somebody gets placed on a short list, every time they get the job at the end, that's data that pushes the positive bias of the machine learning. That's how machine learning works. So the response was always, well, what if I just do it on my own data? We're not a biased company. We really try to be put placing the right people. And I said, here's the problem. You don't choose who gets the job. Your clients do. And your clients could be the most horrifically misogynist bunch of people on the planet. You don't know. It's like a data you learn on their data, not yours. So, or just decision criteria. So you have to be careful for that. Some of the technologies that are coming out today are actually using AI to govern AI.
Yeah.
So you can build technologies that actually look at the data, discover the bias, and then normalize it. And this is really interesting for me because my actual thesis from college was the subjective satisfaction of video games. Now, when I won the thesis award for that one, I have no idea why, it prompted, I think, the dean of our particular engineering faculty to become an alcoholic or something, because he just couldn't believe that this thing actually won. But, you know, it's a hard problem to solve. And I think it needs to be applied here. Now, that's separate from how you might want to use LLMs and RAG. And I'll stop talking now so we can have a conversation, but we can talk about that area separately if that's something we want to bring in.
No, I really appreciated that breakdown. So now you guys know why I really enjoyed when I got to prep with Andrew for this. So if you guys, maybe some of that catching up, right? It started with machine learning because you wanted to look at unstructured and structured data, which I talk about a lot from someone who does automation and try to help people understand, like, it's a lot easier when it's structured. But when you're going to make a match, right, which is what we do with hopefully without bias, you need to look at a lot of data, whether it's structured or not. So I thought that was super impactful.
Thanks. Yeah. Now, if you want me to bring up the LLM side of it,
Elle, you have any thoughts, questions, concerns?
You're the most fascinating person we've had the opportunity. I am like nerding out here. So
And he explains it really well too, which is, I don't know if I said it on the recording, but I was like, you remind me a lot of Larry David. Like, you have some deadpan humor and this great delivery.
I will do his thing or whatever that is, because that's probably.
Yeah. We don't need any of that. Or what Higgins does in Ted Lasso.
The other stuff right now. Another great series.
No, I'm fascinated by the arc of the story that you tell, I think. And it's such a good sort of history, you know, technology history lesson for our readers, which is why I don't want to interrupt you, right? Because I think we're an educational podcast, right? So our listeners depend on our guests to educate us and our guests to educate them. And so you're painting this really good picture of what I think are some of the more insidious things. AI is boiling to the top, and we talk a lot about bias in technology. And we also talk a lot about, DEIB, or keep adding letters to it, and I'm fine with that. But I don't think enough people are talking about actionable things that we can do to countermeasure, you know, using the AI against the AI, to counterbalance these things. And particularly, and we talk about this a lot, we've got products out there that are really good at search and products out there that are good at match, but not a lot that are good at both. So I would love for you to talk about the why behind that. I think you do both really well. Not that I'm biased or anything, I would like for you to talk a little bit about that and maybe why that is.
Sure. That's a great question. I hadn't realized it was so separated, to be honest with you, in the industry. And I don't understand why. I mean, it's one of those interesting, I guess it's an interesting historical background to that. They probably started out separately. But to be honest with you, the essence of being able to match is really basically saying, look, it's like fingerprint matching, right? You know, at some point, there's a declaration legally that says these two fingerprints match, but it's not 100%. You have all of these test points all over your thumb. And, you know, if enough of them match, and especially the ones that are more important than others, you declare it as a match of some level of relevancy or competence and scoring. Well, this is a little bit the same way, because, you know, take a look at, the shape of a job order object. It's all nicely laid out. It was parsed out nicely. Somebody entered a form. And then you have a different shape, which is called a candidate, and it's got its properties and its form, and it's all been there. And you want to match them. Well, that's like fingerprint matching, because you're trying to take I want a person of this job title, and then somebody had that job title on the other side. Well, they had the job title, but was it in 1974, or is it their current one? And they had a similar job title, but is it similar? Is it a really strong synonym or a weak synonym? So the reality is there's always a certain amount of fuzziness there. And let's say, for example, they met most of the criteria, but the one criteria they didn't meet was they're not willing to work for less than a certain amount of money. Well, all of a sudden, even though that's one little data point, that just killed the match. So there's the inherent weighting factor that's in there on each of these different data points that you match. Now, let's say I don't have perfect structured data, but I have a job description on one side and I have a resume on the other side. In fact, the holy grail is here's a batch of resumes, here's a batch of job descriptions, match them up for me. And then I'll come back later and you know, look at the list. So in that case, what do you actually match? Well, you have to extract classic enterprise search type of natural language processing. I have to extract from both of them a latent structure that's inside them. And that latent structure are things like, well, pull out the skills, pull out the job titles, pull out locations, addresses, anything, and then create your own collection of data points and then do the same type of matching on them. The essence of the technology behind that is all search. The matching part, yes, that is sort of what I would call adjacent to search in a sense that you're doing that thumbprint, single point type of fuzzy matching. But in the end, the foundational technology behind it is search, which is in our particular product, for example, our parser technology is exactly the same technology we use to do the fuzzy matching between job descriptions and resumes, because we're pulling up the latent structure inside. Right. So that's, I think I answered your question, or maybe I just started to ramble there a little bit. I don't know. But that's the part. Not that's normal. The essence of it.
Okay. So can you tell me why? Why are these separate? Right? Why is search and match so separate? And why do we have products that only do one and one that doesn't do the other?
Well, it might be historical. In other words, search technologies grew up in their own little world. You know, they started with keyword search, then they went to graph queries, and then they went to vector queries. And that was always around the idea of being able to extract meaningful information for the purpose of anything other than to search. It's just to look at the content and say, I think this is more relevant document than this one. The old classical example of that one was, if I search on Falstaff and Shakespeare, which document is more relevant? Is it the document that has Shakespeare said 8 times and Falstaff once? Or the document that says Shakespeare 2 times, but Falstaff twice? And the answer is the second one. Yes, the count is less, but the rarity of the term Falstaff means you're probably looking for a specific play, not just anything from Shakespeare. That was always the standard example of why search is a little more complex than people think. And so it went there.
Because particularly with keyword searching, right? We were always looking at frequency rather than relevance.
Right. Exactly. That's a great way of putting it. That's exactly it. The relevance is far more subtle. In fact, there was a formula that was created years and years and years ago called TF-IDF. It's a formula that's used to term frequency versus inverse document frequency. You know, that's all the math behind this stuff. Everything turns into math, right? But the search was always about that. It never really thought about matching objects of dissimilar shapes. And now the matching side of it, I think, came out by virtue of the fact that I'm not dealing with blobs of text. I'm only dealing with structured field data. So I'm going to build a science around the idea of thumbprint matching. You know, that's kind of the way I always use it as a parallel. I got lots of dots in different spots. And if enough of the dots match, it's a match, right? But those dots don't exist from text. They only exist in structured data. You have a name field or a job title field. It declares itself as a job title field. But what if all you had was a job description or a resume? Then you realize you need to bring the two of them together. And in the end, when you go back and do that, you'll realize that, oh, my original matching technology probably would be greatly boosted if I actually founded it on what's been happening in search. Over there, that mysterious corner where everybody says, we're not data science, we're not rocket scientists, we're smarter than rocket scientists. You know, the search industry used to say that all the time. It was just silly, you know. Uh-huh. But, you know, that's how it is. And so when it finally comes together, which is one of the things that I have to admit we're trying to do with Kona Search, you realize that actually both technologies complement each other, and they're two puzzle pieces that actually fit together. So yeah. It's historic. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, because Rob knows how I feel about resumes.
How do you feel about resumes?
Rob knows how. If we could light them on fire and never see them again, I would be a happy person. Look, they were invented in 1482. Why are we still using them as a foundational piece of, you know, we're essentially looking for the acceptance of strangers with a piece of freaking paper that was, you know, invented hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And I think it's silly. And so I think that there's so much more meat and data that we have on individuals out there to make more meaningful connections without even having a resume in the conversation. What are your thoughts?
Well, I actually, hooray for you for saying that, by the way, because I think that's true. And I think resumes, I mean, you know, why are resumes relevant today? Because they're a great way to check whether you're lying or not, because everybody goes out to the LinkedIn site to see if they're saying the same thing, right? Oh, I caught you, so I can knock you off the list, right? It's kind of a brute force piece of technology. But other than that, you're absolutely right. And what's really funny today, what's tripping up a lot of the current parsers is that, you know, they have these very nonlinear graphic resumes that look like they were done in you know, some sort of graphic advertising tool. And there's a very popular, beg your pardon?
In Canva.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, to be honest with you, those are, so there's a one that's very, very popular out there. And why is it popular now? Because it's a default resume template in the latest version of Microsoft Word, you know? And so, okay, now you're trying to sell yourself, not by the words on the page, but the cute graphics on the page. And by the way, it's nice that you include a picture of your face or your avatar. But you know what that does, though, is that people look at it and go, you're too old. You don't look right. You know, so great that you're doing all that. So I agree with you. I think that, you know, there's a good example. If I want to build up a database of engineers, I'm talking about developers. What am I going to do? Am I going to find people that are looking for a job? No, I'm going to find the best people who aren't looking for a job. I'll go out to GitHub. I'll look at all the code that's registered there. And in there, it says, here's the person's name, or at least their appetite, their handle. Here's the code. Here's the abstract that describes what this particular code's supposed to do. And I just found their areas of expertise, the languages that they're really good at coding in. And I can even actually look at the feedback comes back from the crowd on Git to determine how successful this thing is. I just built a real resume for that person, not the stuff they decide to write down on a piece of paper. So yeah, I'm all in on that one. Right. Yeah. And right.
There's a good meme out there for LinkedIn. It's like, you know, just a pastry chef. And then he's the CEO of, you know, Crumble. And, you know, this whole overstated, you know, title. And they're just a baker. I think and that's there too. I think lies the problem. I'm guilty of it because you know you have to play the game. I just think it's a silly way for us to create matches. So what do you think is the future?
Well, I think the future is. I mean, you know, it's interesting to look at the industry. It used to be that I beat you because I have a better database. In other words, I had an ability to get data that you don't have. I think now everybody right. has access to all the data all the time. Every resume that ever existed, every human being looking for a job, everybody has that person in their database, or they're able to get it by connecting to a job board. And if the job board doesn't want them to connect to it, they use some technology that scrapes the board and, you know, is kind of in the gray market area, but everybody does it, you know, create a Chrome plugin and watch what people are doing when they go to their job boards. So get all that information anyway. So what is the differentiator? Well, the differentiator, I think, still is the same boring one that's always really been there in the hiding. And that is, I got this massive database that everybody else has. How can I find the best candidate for this job first? It's not even can I find them. It's can I find them before the next guy does? Then I can get back to them and say,
yep,
you want this person. Let's close the deal now. And one of your competitors might have found them later, but it's too late. So the future, I think, is a couple of things. One is building your, if you want to differentiate with your data, you're going to have to find it from other sources, like scraping GitHub and other places. And that'll give you a competitive edge on the data side, but ultimately somebody else will catch up and have the same information. I hate to be pushing the own value of my product, but to be honest with you, I really think it comes down to, I got a big blob of stuff here. I got a smaller blob of stuff over here, which are the jobs. How do I actually match them up? Now, there's another angle to this one. I can match them up by putting a lot of people in the front office and have them just sit there and run queries. Jobs come in to the queue and I run queries and run queries and run queries. That's where matching started, because they said, well, every time you actually are entering in a search query, aren't you trying to recreate the job in the query? Let's come out with matching engines. Okay, so now we have a matching engine. You just click a button, says find me the best candidates. And then after a while you realize, well, I'm going to keep clicking that button while new candidates come in until somebody gets the job. So the next one is, why do you keep clicking the button? Why don't you have the system do it automatically? It just sits there 24/7, lights out, running that query until somebody gets the job where that thing is lost.
Right.
Well, you just change the industry, right? Because you don't need recruiters. What you need are people who are senior recruiters. They watch the system and tweak it to make it better. And yes, that gets back into machine learning and proper version of machine learning to help improve that. But then they actually make the decisions and they help grease the system rather than everybody manually clicking that button over and over and over again. And ultimately you get to the point where you got a blob of job descriptions and they come in from your clients and you got resumes that come in from all sorts of places, including actually from people's paper or created them by scraping them from various places, and you match them up. And when there's a matchup that happens that looks like it turns into a deal, somebody gets woken up to take a look at it and process the deal. That's nirvana, but it does change the fundamental operating costs of a recruiting and staffing company. Now, executive search people will always say, oh yeah, that's really great, but we have very complex jobs to place. You know, you're the 85 criteria that why we need this particular CFO over at that job. To me, that's just more data points, more robustness in the intelligence, but it's still the same model. So that's the way I see it. Where do job boards come out of this in the future? I don't know. I think job boards will fade away eventually.
We've been saying that 15 years.
And then LinkedIn came out. And when it only took LinkedIn, I mean, LinkedIn finally figured out what its value is, just took the scenic route to get there. Right. But still, I don't think they really understand what they have. What they do is they keep changing their licenses, access to their APIs. That's all I know. They don't give it to companies like ours. They just won't. And I don't blame them, to be honest with you. But yeah, I think LinkedIn is the exception that proves the rule. Right? I don't know what's going to happen to the other ones, but I wouldn't invest in them, I don't think, unless they can come up with a new value proposition we don't know about. Access to information is too readily democratized and available these days. So what is the value proposition?
Right. Yeah. 100%. So what is the next disruptor? What's the next AI disruptor?
Well, I actually think, as much as I like to sort of say, hey, you know, bright, shiny object, there's real meat behind RAG and LLMs and vector queries and what's going on there. We just made it look.
You've been saying RAG a bunch. You want to give a little more detail?
Oh, yeah. Tell the audience.
Yeah. RAG. God love our industry for coming up with acronyms where the words themselves actually don't add to the acronym. So LLMs, large language models, they basically are massive intelligent databases of stuff. And what you do is you create models to run against them so that you can pull out meaningful information. In other words, they are the sort of real reptilian level brain behind everything we know as ChatGPT and OpenAI these days. And some of the essence of the technology behind is the understanding of how vector queries work. RAG, LLMs are all public and they're all out there and they're general. So think of them like, I guess, think of Wikipedia or Wikidata. It's general information. Sure. That it's not accurate. That's a different discussion. All you have to do is look at a couple of the rages that go on in Wikipedia's back and forth in their data. But the reality is that it's generic data. It's not your data. So if you want to actually have an LLM that's based on your information, even just your particular vertical market, you've got to be able to inject data into that model that is yours at a private setting. That's really where RAG comes in. Allows you to personalize LLMs and OpenAI for your particular business and market. It doesn't mean that you get rid of the other stuff, but it means that you can actually get it personalized towards you. And actually, that's not a trivial thing to say, because it's a whole different way of looking at patterns and discovering patterns in your content, as opposed to just what everybody else says in the rest of the world. And certainly for, like say, for example, the medical industry, pharmaceutical industry, you know, it's very different placing people in the medical industry than it is placing people pretty much anywhere else. So that's where that comes in. Now, how do you use it? Well, one way to use it is to, I want to find out all the skills that are in my particular resume or in my job description. Well, I can use some very fancy technology and massive synonym dictionaries and everything else to pull them out. But they're all very 100%, 0% things, right? The synonym isn't found and your dictionary doesn't exist. But the patterns that are pulled out of all of the content relates to what you're trying to look at, resumes, job descriptions and such. If all of that is sitting in a large model, then why not capitalize on it, right? Now, in a pragmatic standpoint, that's great, but you know, nobody's going to allow their resumes to be thrown out into the public in somebody's LLM. It's not going to happen. We were told that blatantly up front. We put everything we have is all specialized and behind our firewall. So we've solved that problem for some time now. But the reality is that it's used not for machine learning. It's used in order to help extract information or meaning and pull out synonyms and similarities and terminology so that you can actually improve your match. Now, I don't want to get too much deeper into that because now it's my IP for my prop. I want to create at least an artificial barrier to competition in there somewhere. But that's essentially it. So I think that that's going to have a major impact, not so much on the searching side, because search is really not a thing anymore. Search is really a technology that enables other things to happen. The other part to answer your question, and then again, I'll shut up and not ramble, but is that finding information and even through matching is nice, but what is the actual action that goes along with it? You know, in Salesforce, we have flows. I'm going to use the Salesforce context here. Because, you know, we're sort of selling into the Salesforce community. Everything is run by flows, which implies that, you know, it's actionable content. Now, that's a stupid marketing phrase that's been used for 20 years in the search industry, but it actually means something. And that is to say, I'm not like Google. I just go over here, and ask a question again and answer, and I go back to my regular job. It's part of your job. So matching is a step towards that. But imagine creating flows within your ATS that do things that are completely unique to the recruiting company. And at some point I want to say match here. Very complex when I do it. Do this type of match here. Do a search over here. You're now curating information from task A to task B. It could even be lights out. It doesn't even have to actually be seen by anybody. And that was always one of the things I always thought was funny about Gen AI right now. Everybody wants to put it out in front of everybody's face. But it's very complex math, right? It's sort of like, and this is one of those analogies I always come up with. I remember there's a condo building across the street from us, and it was one of the first buildings that had indoor plumbing. I made it. I have indoor plumbing in my condo, so I'm going to put all the pipes on the outside of the wall. So when we go and have dinner, everybody can see my indoor plumbing pipes, which sounds ridiculous today, right? Obviously, they're in the walls, right? You know, you don't have indoor plumbing, you can flush your toilet and turn on your tap. Right? But in those days, you want to parade it in front of everybody. And that's where I think OpenAI and, chat's really an end user tool, but OpenAI and LLMs and everything else, they shouldn't be out front of what I call mere mortals. It's technology behind the scenes. Now, make sure you have a nice shutoff valve, otherwise you're going to flood your apartment. But the reality is that it should be enabling something else that actually makes sense and has value to the customer. Not be the end of itself, but search is the same way. So that's
it.
Love it.
We've said it a million times. It's not a replacement, it's an enhancement. And I could sit here and talk to you all day because we haven't even gotten into like career wallets and blockchain and you know, this idea of immutable data. We're going to have you on again because this is fascinating. And I think we've given our listeners a ton to chew on, that it is more complex, just because it says AI, we gotta avoid the shiny tools. What I do love though, is the fact that we have over the last 20 years as an industry gotten really good at what I call digital hoarding. Right. And so the idea that we could actually do something meaningful with that, I think, you know, where we have better tools, better systems, better matching, better searching, I think will allow us to do right by those that are looking for a job and looking for a job in a timely way. So this was a fascinating conversation, Andrew. Thank you so much. Like I said, we could sit here and talk all day about this.
Well, thank you very much. And yeah, I will be honest with you, just to borrow a term from the industry, I do rag on a lot about this stuff. And so I wait till people say, Andrew, you can stop now, let everybody else talk. You're sucking the air out of the room. But I'd love to have a chance to chat with you more often, because we never even got into one of the most important topics, which is F1.
But
my son and I are binging. We're binging the F1 series on Netflix. And I gotta love it, man. I tell you, it's nothing better than watching. What are the two? He knows everybody. Who are the two players that are like the two top folks here? The young guy from Red Bull, and then of course Ferrari's getting it up and up and down. Mercedes got their
Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah,
he's from Mercedes. And then what's the other guy's name? Vander.
He's from Red Bull.
Vanderton.
Well, he's no, it's not him. It's
Verstappen. Verstappen moved.
Verstappen. Yeah, there he goes. I was close.
I love Verstappen. I do not like Hamilton, but I do love Toto Wolff.
Oh yes, yes. Oh yes, that's true. I'm so into.
All right. Well, you too. I'm gonna cut you off here.
Yeah. All right.
It's a little late in the day, big guy. So
thanks.
Thank you, Andrew, for coming on and nerding out with us on all these things. It was as fascinating and as awesome as I thought it would be. Lauren, you got to contain your nerd sometimes.
I know. I got to reel in my nerd, Andrew. Sorry. We're going to do this again because.
Yeah, we'll do this again. We'll just let this go. We'll let you guys rag on.
Rob,
yes, one day. Exactly.
Nerd it.
And me and anybody else involved can go. We'll just let you guys go play. I'll just hit record.
Go play in the nerd kingdom.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the You Own the Experience podcast.
You can catch all our previous episodes at whyowepodcast.com and learn more about our thriving staffing community by signing up for the Why We newsletter.
And coming soon is Staffing Huddle, an online open community dedicated to your staffing success.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Lauren. Go do something good.